My name is Mary and I am an alcoholic. Can everybody hear me? I hear the sound is not that great. Can you hear okay? I don't know how you're going to feel about that in a little while, but I would like to thank Polly so much for putting on this wonderful thing for women. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. And I would like to thank Lee as well, because I know that Lee was such a huge part of doing this. And, you know, he does so much. And, of course, the committee, the silent soldiers that just go about and do all the heavy work. Thank you. And, yeah. And thank you, Cheryl. It's great to see you again. Yeah. And you know, Vivian said I was sucking up to Lee. I love Lee and John, and I see them a lot, and they do so much, and the taping and everything. And I would like to have on my age and sex resume that I spent a week with Lee in Cancun. And he was so good. But actually, it was sober vacations. But it was, we were all there. But, and also, I spent a weekend with John in Cayman Islands. It was so exciting, wasn't it? But again, it was work, so anyway. So I am here today to talk about the fourth step. You know, somebody asked me once, do you ever make any notes? And, oh, before I forget, thank you, Betty, for picking me up at the airport. That's hard work. It was a lot of walking for you, and I'm so grateful for you for putting out all that energy just to do that. Thank you very much. Made a section and feel a small inventory of ourselves. I never make notes when I'm giving my talk, because when I'm giving my talk, I'm talking about my talk. I'm talking about my life. I'm talking about what happened to me. But, you know, the steps have evolved for me. The steps have changed as I have done them over and over and over again. And I get new insights. And sometimes I jot down things just for me. And I also jot things down just to share them with my sponsees. Not that they always listen to me, but at least I have it on paper. You know, I'd like them all to sign it when I tell them. But they don't. You know, and yesterday I flew in here from Aruba. My youngest son, Mark, is in Aruba. He lives there with his wife and my two grandchildren. And I had the most beautiful 2 weeks, and I will tell you, the reason I was able to have that beautiful 2 weeks is because of the work I have done in the fourth and fifth and the eighth and the ninth. It would not have been possible. You see, these are the great healing steps. These are the great steps that take away the thing that always separated us, even from the people we loved. What are morals? You know, Dr. Silkworth writes in the big book that they realized that alcoholics needed some kind of a moral psychology, but they didn't know how to apply it. This is prior to the formation of Alcoholics Anonymous. A moral psychology, which means alcoholics were not moral. I don't know what else you can assume from that. So that means that I am inclined to go towards bad behavior. And that is what has always been for me. I don't know why. I think I was just born that way. I don't know why. I mean, if something was good, I didn't want to do it. if I was told don't do it, I'm a doing it. I mean, it was just like that. And it caused great consternation. I was born in a Roman Catholic household, very, very strong Roman Catholic, very good living people. I was only ever taught the right things to do, and I didn't have any ability for it. I just did not. I had an absolute affinity for doing the wrong thing, and I do not know why that was. You know, we're getting down to the causes and the conditions here. The things that warp my personality. You know, I've said it a million times and I'll say it again. From I could think, I knew there was something wrong with me. And the reason I knew there was something wrong with me is because people were always saying to me, there's something seriously wrong with you. And I never knew what it was. I knew that I would try too hard to fit in. I knew that in taking my inventory afterwards, I realized that I never wanted to be a friend among friends. I always wanted to be special. And the reason I wanted to be special is because I felt inferior. And when you feel inferior, then you develop an ego, an inflated ego with low self-esteem. You know, for many years, 4 years in all, like Carla, I was in and out of the mental institutions. I wanted to be classified schizophrenic. I see you. That's so unkind. Talk to me later. But, you know, what happened was, when I drank, I went crazy. Absolutely and completely crazy. Now, I've been married 4 times. It's so funny, I was thinking about Vivian. I was going to speak at the Ladybug retreat. And Vivian called and she said, would I do a workshop on sex and intimacy? She was pulling my leg. But I said, I know everything there is to know about sex. I know absolutely nothing about intimacy. I've been married 4 times. I know nothing about intimacy. But I was immoral from the get-go. I mean, I just was. I was very promiscuous, and also I lied and I was stealing and from an early young age. And you know, my family were such good living people. My mother was president of the Union of Catholic Mothers. She would never go anywhere without her hat and her gloves on. And here am I with this behavior. My mother used to sit pretending to read a paper, and she'd be looking at me like this. And I used to say to her, what are you looking at? She said, I don't know where you came from. So who knew, you know? So what happened when I was, the last time I was in the mental institution? Now, you see, alcoholism looks a lot like many illnesses. I was classified manic depressive. Now, I was classified manic depressive after I started drinking. Now, that's a very important thing. All I'm going to say on that is, regards what we tell people about medication and Alcoholics Anonymous, my qualifier for ever even putting my foot in the water on that one is, did you start taking the medication before you drank or after you drank? I think it's so important because we do have people who are true manic depressives or bipolar who also suffer from alcoholism. Now, alcoholism looks like bipolar illness. It certainly did with me. So when I used to go into the mental institutions, taken by the police, taken by other people, taken by concerned citizens, which were my husbands, I would act up when I was capable of acting up, and I would behave worse, or else I would be so gone that I'd just be in the fetal position. So they just, and also I always lied about how much I drank. The last time I was taken in there, I wasn't able to lie because I had gone down in a drunken psychosis to see the psychiatrist who had been looking after me for 4 years and said to him, "I've come to tell you that I like your work so much I'm going to buy this hospital." They locked me up. Now, here's what happened to me. It wasn't the psychiatrist who got me to surrender, although certainly his honesty, because surrender is absolutely integral to doing the fourth step. The fourth step is a humiliating process. It is not something that we do to feel good about ourselves. It is something we do to find out what has warped us. Why is it that I have, what it talks about in the 12 and 12, a seeming inability to form a true partnership with another human being? Why is it? Why is it that all the living problems I have in the world have to do with relationships? Because I don't like people. Simple. It's not complex. I just don't like people that much. I mean, we make this so complicated, and it's not. I did my first four. Do you want to come and sit down, ladies? There's some up here. I did my first fourth step when I was about 5-6 weeks sober. And I'll tell you how that came about. I had had a few months sobriety. And unfortunately, at that time, the husband and wife team who were sponsoring me, they were wonderful people in AA. They did a lot for AA. But they said, "You better wait for a long time, quite a while, before you start the step journey." Now, I hated myself, and I'm not going to get into my drunkologue, but the things that had happened to me, I hated myself. I had done dreadful things. I had lost my darling children, and life was just really horrible for me, and I was a horrible human being. So what happened was, I had a few months sobriety, and as I did countless times, I wanted to see my sons, who were living in Jamaica with their father. And I called Scotland, again, as I've done a million times. They called the father and said, "She's sober in AA. Send the boys up to Edmonton, Alberta." At that time, I was married to a man called John. I've been married to two Johns, but not that John. Anyway, so my two little boys came up from Jamaica to spend the summer with me in Alberta, and my two aunts flew out from Scotland, and they were my chaperones. And I had 6 weeks with my sons. And the one that's in Aruba now, that's the one and only time he'd ever seen me sober. I know, because I was drinking from when he was born. And we had a beautiful time together. But what happened was, I hadn't done the third step, I hadn't done the fourth step. And because my eldest boy, who at that time, 1984, that was the year of 1984, the year I got sober, he was 16. I was blaming him for having gone behind my back to tell his father that I was a drunk and that he didn't want to be with me anymore. And that was what had caused them to be taken away from me. And I was a hopeless drunk. But I began to get a resentment towards my darling son. I began to get angry at my aunts because they kept watching me too closely. I began to get angry with the man I was married to because, "Why did I marry you?" he started making odd noises when he ate. And I could hear him gulping from two rooms away. You know, I just didn't like him either, you know. And I wanted my sons to stay. Because, believe me, my heart is cracked from losing my boys. I love my boys. And there is no, I'd rather have my fingernails pulled out and toes and rat than have to live without my children. And I can't bear to think what it's like for people who have lost their children. Can't bear to think of it. I lived for 13 years without my sons. And it was a nightmare. And it was caused by alcoholism and my behavior. So what happened was, my aunts went back to Scotland. My dry date is the 10th of August, 1984. On the 8th of August, 1984, my aunts went back to Scotland. My sons were leaving to go back to Jamaica on the 10th of August. On the 9th of August, the only one day I had alone with them, I sent my sons out to buy a video, rent a video, and I drank a bottle. And when they came home, I was so drunk I couldn't get the door open. And eventually when the door was kicked down, they came and found me lying in the bathroom. And what I did then was show my sons my cesarean scars. Because to say, how could you ever leave me? That's what I put my sons through. Time after time. So what happened was, when they left the next morning and some AA people took them to the airport with John, a little girl from AA spent the night with me and she knelt down and she said the third step prayer. And I got that moment of graceful clarity through great despair. You see, knowing I had done that one more time to my sons, behaved like that, was so appalling to me that it was, and so despairing to me that it was what gave me the aperture of grace and clarity. And I saw mea culpa. Mea culpa. It doesn't matter what anybody else ever did to me. It's what I did that is causing my sons so much grief. And what happened then is I got back into AA, I got a new sponsor, and I got shingles. I'm so grateful, you know. And what those shingles did for me, because I would not take medication, they were the horrendous pain. And I was in bed. And I remember reading about Bill Wilson taking a piece of yellow scrap paper to write the 12 steps. You know, when you hear in the history how he wrote out the 12 steps. We all know that. It's in our literature. I got myself out a piece of yellow scrap and a pencil, and I started writing my 4-step. I believe in doing the 4-step very quickly for people like me. Because if I try and live with the things I have done, and I get any degree of consciousness, I will drink to obliviate it. I will drink to make it your fault. I will drink because I cannot bear the life I have created for myself. So that's what I did. And I had also, because at that time I didn't trust anybody in AA, just before I got shingles, I had looked at on the board. We have an Al-Anon club in Edmonton, Alberta. And they had a list of people who were doing the 4-step. And I saw a Catholic priest on there, who was also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, who was hearing 4 steps. And I thought to myself, in my newly formed spiritual state, I'm going to go back to him, the Catholic priest, and dump this stuff where it belongs, you know. He He was a wonderful, beautiful man. Now let me tell you, how I did that first fourth step was not according to the book. I did that first fourth step because I wanted to go right back to the... I'd been walking around without needing to scoop. Everything was sitting right here. That mea culpa, you know what I'm talking about, Carla, that mea culpa gave me the complete knowledge of everything I had done that was bothering me. And that's what I wrote down from when I could remember. You know, Bill says we got to write down our wrongs. It's not about looking at how good I was, because I wasn't very good. It's about writing about my wrongs. I got it on paper and I got down to that priest. And he was a very loving man. And I did try and shock him a couple of times. But he was basically unshockable and gentle. And a couple of times he said to me, "Do you think you've told me all you need to tell me?" And I'll tell you, I could not think of anything else to tell him at that time, because we had prayed together. I wasn't holding anything back. I just didn't have anything more at that time. And he prayed with me, and he said, "Go back now and do your sixth and your seventh, just the way it is in the book," and that's what I did. And I'll tell you, here's what happened to me. For many years, I had been walking on the dark side of the street, because I hated myself. I hated sunlight. I was so ashamed. I was filled with shame. I used to walk with my head down. And the men in AA used to say to me, "Hold your head up, darling. Hold your head up." And I didn't want to. I didn't want it out of, for many reasons. But I came out of that place after doing my fourth step, my fifth step. And across the street, there was the sunlight on these big buildings. The sunny side of the street, you could say. And that was my metaphor. I walked across and started walking on the sunny side of the street, because I had left all that stuff there. And how freeing was that? Now, I have done many, many other fifths. Because you see, here's the thing. What happens to me as I journey through life is that I will come across the same situation time after time ad nauseum. Ad nauseum. And I will behave in the same stupid manner. And I have to get the... I'm going to share how one of those things that happened just last May. Last May, I had been working for 4 years with a woman that God had sent me to test my patience. So, this woman was a brilliant woman. She started this business by herself. It was just her and me in the office, and she had all these people out in the field. And she would sometimes take folders and she'd throw them on the ground, the way I used to behave as a drunk, you know. And she'd scream and hold her hair, and I wanted to go up and smack her, and I didn't. I'd just get her a tissue and say, "This too shall pass," you know. And then call my sponsor, you know, and my sponsor would say, no, you need the money right now. And yeah. So anyway, what happened was, every year I make three trips. I go to Scotland to see my aunts. I go to British Columbia to see my eldest son. And I go to Aruba to see my other son. And I was working for her part-time, and she'd cut my hours. And I don't get paid for taking vacation. It was unpaid leave. So anyway, I come back from Aruba May last year, and before I went into work at 1:30, I had to go and get some teeth work done. And it's very expensive, and I was not in fit spiritual condition. Okay. So I went into the office, and she said to me, "So how are you?" I said, "Not good. Not good." Because I wasn't putting up with anymore. You know, I had enough. I said, "I just spent a month's income on my teeth." She said, "Don't complain to me about teeth. You go to Aruba every year, you go to Scotland every year, you go to British Columbia every year," and I lost it. I went and I closed the front door of the office. And it was just her and I. And she's sitting there like you. And I took her inventory from when she was birthed. And she was sitting cowering in the chair, much like Cheryl. And she said to me, "You're probably in a lot of pain and not feeling well. I think you should go home." I said, "Sure, I've got work to do. You go home." And she did. She left. And I was so ashamed. I felt, you know how empowering it is to just lose it? Remember what it was like to humiliate people? Or to show them how bad we can be? That's not a spiritual life. And I felt so ashamed. And I knelt down and I prayed. And because I could see how afraid she was. And I called my sponsor and she said, "Mary, it's not been good for a while." She said, "You're inclined to keep relationships going past their sell-by date." Which is true. Story of my life. She said, "I want you to go in tomorrow and make amends and give her a week's notice." And that's what I did. But you see, what I did then, I didn't do a tenth on that. I did a mini fourth and fifth. Because I realized that that's not the first time that has happened to me. I put up with situations for a while and then I blow. Now, I'm not mean. I don't know a lot of alcoholics that are truly mean. Think about the word mean. We are people that are reactive. We react and then we make amends. We got the best deal, you know. But a mean person is somebody who's plotting and do, you know, to get you. You know, and I don't know, I haven't encountered that in AA, you know. But anyway, here's the thing. What I did was I did my mini fourth on to try and get down to really what it was. Where was I to blame? What was it? And I found out what it was, really. And it basically came down to this. Either envy or jealousy. That's what it was. Envy and jealousy at what this woman had achieved. At this Jaguar that she was driving that I wanted. About this big mansion that she lives in that I wanted. Which is all ridiculous. I mean, I'm coming from the street. I used to live at the bottom of Lincoln Road on Miami Beach. What God has given me. What miracles God has wrought in my life. I'm usually filled with gratitude. Now I want to be in a mansion driving a Jag. Do you see how crazy that is? It has no base in reality. But that's what can happen to me when I begin to get into one of my defects. And then it will blow and blow and blow into something that is quite unrecognizable to what it started out as. And what could have happened is if she had reacted to me by, during my tantrum, throwing something at me when I was in that unhinged state, who knows? When I was 8 years sober, I took a knife to my husband. And at that time, Clancy was my sponsor. He said, "I told you when you're arguing, stay away from the knife drawer." I mean, that hasn't happened to me in a long, long time, but we can get into rages, you know. That's why I always say to my sponsees, do not live in a relationship that is causing you a lot of trouble. Because we cannot bear continual discontent and arguing. We really do want peace. We've had all the excitement we need, thank you. At least, you know, I have. I just want a little bit of shush. Little bit of shush. So, I don't sit down and go through the steps with my sponsees at great length, except for 4 and 5 and 8 and 9. Because I truly believe that by the time they've walked in the door, they're at step 3. And I will do the 3rd step prayer. I will sit and ask them a few questions and I'll do the 3rd. Because I want them to go to step studies. My group has a step study. I want them to go to big book studies. My group has a big book study. I want them to sit in the group experience and to get all the wisdom that is in the room, as well as applying themselves to reading this book. Not Grey's Anatomy or whatever is out right now, but this book. You got it. Clever people. So, now taking all these actions, what do they do for me? Taking all these actions begin to develop a sense of self-esteem. When I am doing the right thing, when I am doing the next right thing, I begin to feel really good about myself. When I am not doing things that will cause me consternation, cause me to stay awake at night, when I become a citizen of the world, a taxpaying citizen of the world, I begin to get some self-esteem. You know, this life that we have, this spiritual life that is not a theory, it is not about happiness. Happiness is about being of use. The reason we are doing this, all of this, is to fit ourselves to be of ultimate use to God and our fellows. How great is that? Is there anything greater than service to your fellow man? Is there anything greater than service to your fellow man? I used to be a wart on the nose of society. You know, I was a tick. And now I have a life of great meaning and purpose. You know, the last time I was in the mental institution, Dr. Milliken, who was my psychiatrist and had been for the 4 years, he called me aside and he said to me, I've had to write something for the judge because I'm not getting in there. But I had done a lot of things before they took me into the mental institution and I was in a lot of trouble because I was violent. You know, all my husbands have had a nervous tic like this. You know, it's because I'm not a fun girl when I drink. And what would happen is I would get drunk and I'd say to them, if you drop asleep tonight, I'll kill you. So they would be like this. So anyway, I was in a lot of trouble. And anyway, so Dr. Milliken called me and he said, there's some things we're going to do before we discharge you. He said, we're going to send you to a course, an assertiveness course. I said to him, I don't need an assertiveness course. I'm aggressive. I'm in here because I tried to kill my husband. He said, but that's not assertive. That is aggressive. He said, you see, alcoholics, in my opinion, don't have enough self-esteem to be assertive. And that is why alcoholics are aggressive, right? So I went to an assertiveness training with all these woozies. And I taught them how to be aggressive. You know, for example, let's take that example I just had with the boss. If my self-esteem had been in a good place, if I had been in fit spiritual condition, I would have been able to have been assertive with that woman without losing my temper. I would have been able to go and smile the way my sponsor does when she's taking my inventory. You know? And say these dreadful things couched in love, you know. And that would have been assertive. Socrates said the unexamined life is not worth living. Not Plato. Socrates. Plato was just writing about what Socrates said. But Ralph White's not here, so he can't laugh at me for saying that. And the benefits of doing this for me have been so many that I'm hard pressed to think that I used to be encased in darkness. I thought that there was no way ever for me to tell another human being the things I had done. Going way back to when I was a young girl. This program that we have is nothing less than a miracle of moral, psychological healing. We are the most fortunate people in the world that we were given this. Prior to 1935, chronic alcoholics like me were doomed to die. And they were dying with these horrible things in their mind, thinking there was a God who could never love them. What this showed me during this step is how God loved me. Because God had brought a horror like me into his hallowed rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and bestowed upon me the gift of healing through the steps. And it is an ongoing process that goes on until I will die. Because I will ask God to remove my defects of character, and we'll be hearing about that soon. But sometimes God doesn't. And I have to look at these things time after time to see how they are affecting my relationships. What happened was, a few years ago, when my son first moved to Aruba, my youngest son, he is the one who was only 7 years old when he was taken away from me. And he never would talk about my alcoholism. Every time I wanted to make amends, he'd say, "Mommy, it's over now, you're sober now, it's okay." But a few years ago, it must be about 6 or 7, I went down to Aruba, my first trip, to see him. And he'd been living in Toronto, and we'd even lived together for a while. And one night, my grandchildren were out playing. And my eldest grandchild at that time was 7, the same age that Mark was when he was taken away from me. And my son was sitting with his back to me having dinner. And I said to him, "Don't you think we should bring Maya in, son? It's getting dark outside." And without even turning around, he said to me, "So where was I when I was 7, Mum?" And it was like a bell in my stomach. But I can't blame him for saying that. But you see, he's got it all right here. He doesn't want to talk about it to me. But he's got it all right here. And I wish he could go to Al-Anon to get the stuff, as I did with that priest, right off the top. Because it is affecting his life. He's a good boy, and he's a great, he likes to drink, but he doesn't drink too much. He used to, but doesn't anymore. He's a workaholic, great father. But I know it's there. I can see it in him. And you know, we are just so very, very, very lucky. I had, you know, there's a thing that a nail is I love this. A nail is driven out by another nail. And habit is overcome by habit. The reason I talk about habit is sometimes I was in the habit of doing the wrong thing. If there's something comes up, my first thought will be to do the wrong thing. Sometimes. Because I don't want to take the blame for breaking that. Or I don't, whatever it is, some stupid thing. But if I keep saying, no, do the right thing, tell the truth, then I keep my, it's hard work being spiritual. You know, live life on a spiritual basis or die an alcoholic death. You know, we only have a couple of choices. But, you know, Bill Wilson, I'll kind of finish up with this. It's very interesting. You know when Bill was living upstairs at the old clubhouse? When him and Lois had been ejected from their beautiful home, they had no place to live. Bill had was sober for a few years, and he was having an imaginary ulcer attack one morning or evening. And just, he was full of self-pity. Was not feeling good. And he heard this guy come. The janitor came and told him there was someone to see him. And he heard the labored footsteps coming up the steps, and he thought it was a drunk coming up to see him. And it was actually Father Ed Dowling, the Jesuit. And the Jesuit priest had come really to ask him one thing. Where did you get the 12 steps from? And Bill told him, and he said, you know, they're very closely aligned to the spirituals of Ignatius Loyola, which is a discipline that the Jesuits put themselves through every year. That's what we have. But anyway, it was only through sitting down with Father Ed Dowling that Bill felt he had finally done a proper fifth step. And that's why afterwards he wrote the 12 and 12. Because it was only with sitting down with Father Ed, and he'd been a few years sober and written the big book, he realized about the omissions and the actions. Omissions and actions, and also about the great demands he was putting on people. And I realized too, I can be demanding. And what that does is, it makes other people react because they don't want to do it. We have a strange passive dependence about us, some of us alcoholics, and people get fed up with it. And we lean on them until they get fed up and they eventually fly away and leave us. We can be passive dependent or aggressively dependent. It just seems to be something in our personality. And I had to have a good look at that too. And that's what Bill was finding out about his behavior with Lois and everybody else when he first got the visit from Father Ed. And so I would suggest, as I do suggest, if you feel there's still things, because remember, we'll never be 100%. This is a lifetime job. But if you're having problem in any area of your life, I tell my sponsees, if I have done, to go through the seven deadly sins. Because I'll tell you, there is so much in there. There's lust. What is lust? It's an intense desire or craving for sex, power, etc. You can have lust for basically anything. If you want to know about my favorite lust, see me later. There's gluttony, overindulgence, over-consummation. I mean, how often do we do that? Maybe just even going to Walmart. Amanda, I know. Then there's greed, a selfish, excessive desire for more. Does anyone identify with that? Every time I sit in front of a plate of cakes, I know what that is. Sloth. What is sloth? Does anyone know the true definition of sloth? Inactivity through doing nothing, not doing God's work. It could lead you into sin. Did you know that inactivity can lead you to sin? Because we get bored very quickly. I'm bored. What shall I do? Let's have sex. I'm bored. What shall I do? Let's get married. Okay, then there's wrath. Anger, violent reaction, strong, vengeful anger. Envy. Now, there's a difference between envy and jealousy. Envy is the longing for something someone else has without wishing them any harm. Like a resentment, really. You know, I'm not going to kill you for it, but I think I should have it and not you. Jealousy is being vengeful out of fear of being replaced by someone or something else. That's the difference. And then pride. Well, that just about covers it all. Pride is an inflated sense of self. Says in our big book, with these steps, what we're doing is we've got to get rid of self, or it will kill us. Self, self, self. Selfish, self-centered, self will run riot. When I used to go to Ireland every year for my holidays, because I'm Irish, Scottish, English, I'm a Brit, and I used to go to Ireland and they say, it's herself has come. And what that means is kind of, who does she think she is? Here she comes, the great self. So we got to get rid of... So that's what pride is. Pride is an inflated sense of self. And what happens is that every other one of these six deadly sins, everything that we ever do in our inventory, everything that is with us in our life, it is all down to the sense of self we have, that we feel we have to protect, that I feel that I am just a little different from you, that I am just a little bit better, a little bit lesser, I just need more of your love, I don't need that much of your love, I want you hanging around, I don't want you hanging around, don't breathe on me, come close. So that's the fourth and fifth for me, and all the other fifths I have done with my sponsors, and I like my sponsees to do their fifths with me, because how else will I know who they really are? If they really don't want to do it, I will say to them to go to somebody they trust, but most of them are good and they will come and they will do it with me. And I don't even remember their fifth steps. I don't. But I'll just say this to you, and it was a great thing of a piece of advice I got in the very early days. Before you sit down and write your fourth, make an appointment to do your fifth. I sponsored a woman who left her fifth as well, but make sure you get rid of it. She left her fifth, went on vacation, her husband found it and divorced her. I wasn't sponsoring her at the time. So these are very precious, precious things. I want to thank you all for being here, and I've just enjoyed this so much. Thank you.